Is the anxiety level in the market decreasing?
This is Jerry Toome with Smart Money, a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services with Cornerstone President and Founder, Jerry Toome. Jerry Toome is a certified financial planner. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member, FINRA, and SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Toome's Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management, or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. We are here to talk about your finances, investments, and the economy, and we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.
Welcome to Smart Money with Jerry Toome. This is Michael Williams, and today we got a special guest with us for the first half of the show. We'll have David McCord. I guess we actually have two special guests, if I actually word that correctly. We got David McCord, our chartered market technician in-house here at Cornerstone Financial Services, with us. And then the second half of the show, you'll hear Jerry have an interview with Dan Russo of Potomac. Potomac is one of the money managers we like, and of course, past performance is no guarantee of future results. But they've actually fared this volatility for 2025 pretty well this year. So we've been very pleased with them. So you can hear more from Dan Russo on how they look at the markets and how their system works. Of course, if you'd like to learn more about them, you can give us a call at 1-800-327-4285. But before we get to Dan Russo, I want to get David. David, you know, we were talking earlier this week with all this big ups, big down days. Sometimes it's hard to step back and get a big picture of what's the market doing overall, not just these daily swings. So I thought we kind of start there. What do you see as the big picture of the market action right now?
Well, I would say if I had to put one word on it, it would be transition. And so it's a little bit unsettled. And really, ultimately, that matches with what we're seeing in the overall economy and geopolitical situation around the world. Is the way that it's been billed by the U.S. administration is essentially a reset, a restart, a new way of doing things. And right. So market initially, as we've seen with all of the tariff follow through to the downside, did not like the way that was looking at the front end. And so now there's a little bit of reassessment going on. So whether I wouldn't say we're out of the woods entirely, but at least it's not in what was looking to be a total meltdown mode. Just going back a couple weeks ago.
Right, right.
Now, you know, it's kind of settled down, moving the other way. So previously we had a good uptrend going. I would not say we've reinstated that. I would not say that we are, you know, fully in, still in a down mode. So, you know, that's why I'm saying transition. We'll have to wait a little bit longer to see, okay, do we get a new uptrend kicking off after the, you know, decline that we've had? Or maybe it's just a period of coming back and doing a little bit more digestion, just because I think, you know, again, I'm a little bit surprised at the extent of the strength that we've seen off of the lows. We've retraced more than half of the decline. In fact, almost 65% of it. So that's a good, in fairly short order. So we went straight down. Now we've been going not exactly right. Straight up, but, you know, close enough for what we're talking about here, big picture wise. So I think there's a lot of unanswered questions. The market, though, for the meantime, seems to be settling down enough to say, okay, more back into wait and see mode instead of, oh my goodness, everything is totally falling apart mode.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. We've talked about before investor psychology, that negative news, negative effects to your money, you feel like two or three times more than you do the positive. And so even though we've had some positive days, sometimes these negative ones just stick out. And that's what we remember. That's why it's kind of need to kind of step back and look at the forest for the trees periodically, just kind of see what's the big picture of the trend. All right, so there's some different information going on right now. The market is very news-driven. You know, for the past couple of years, it was Fed-driven. What's the Fed going to say? What's the Fed going to say? Now it's all about what's Trump doing? So it's interesting, you know, get an update on what Trump's been saying, what he's doing, but also update on what's actually coming about. So any thoughts on the first, starting off with Trump, his first 100 days in office? It's been hectic.
Yeah, no question. It's been the word I would use, and of course, I'm sure he would not like that, but the word I would use still is chaotic, just because we have a lot of unsettled issues. And so negotiation, by the very nature of it, and if you go and read his book, and Jerry's talked about that some, the first principle is you ask for the moon, and then you wait and see how everything shakes out. And so, however, when you come in with guns blazing, so to speak, and the markets are like, oh my goodness, nobody's ever going to agree to any of this, which of course is more or less accurate, but that's not the end game. And so that's why I'm saying transition is, and that's really where we are, is do we know what the end results are going to be of tariffs? No. Is it going to be what was instituted exactly on Liberation Day, so to speak, or as the more cynical and negative among us would say, Obliteration Day? But, and there's several other takes on that. But, you know, we're not to the end of the process yet. And so I just think that is unsettling. And as you and I had talked about before, not just investors, but human behavior, psychology says we have what's called the status quo bias. In other words, we are hardwired to believe that the way things have been in the recent past is the way that they will continue to be. And so when you get a big shakeup to the system like this, where Trump is saying flat out the status quo is going away, and all of us, you know, in terms of our tracking the markets, tracking this indicator, that indicator, are used to dealing with it in a certain paradigm, to use the fancy word, you know, but just a certain way of looking at it. And now you're shaking that up. So it doesn't mean that we won't be able to settle into whatever, it's a cliche also, but the new normal, whatever the new normal is on the other side of this, we'll have, you know, probably some parameters that will be looked at a little bit differently and interpreted a little bit differently. Why? Because the environment is not the prior status quo, but we're not through the adjustment period yet. So I do think, you know, the market action being as positive as it's been the last several weeks is a little bit surprising to me, even though, you know, obviously we always say, you know, technicians are going to say, you know, you watch the market do what it's going to do. You don't get too much into prediction mode. But nevertheless, it's been a, you know, big move up from the lows. Does that mean that we're just going to blow it out and go straight to new highs after having, you know, pretty much close to a bear market level decline already? You know, not necessarily at all. So I don't think we can knee jerk based on just the short move we've seen. I just think clearly the immediate doom scenario has not played out in terms of what it felt like in the market a few weeks back. I don't think immediate euphoria off of the lows is likely to be the outcome here either.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have a, you know, we do a lot of research. Y'all have seen our charts and stuff we publish in our newsletters, interviews we've had on here with different researchers like BCA Research, Ned Davis, Alpine Macro, etc. And there's one that we like. We really enjoy his information, but I think he's got something against Trump. And they try to stay non-political, but just the way he talks, he refers to him as Donald. He doesn't want to refer to him as President Trump. And then he's one of those that, you know, that was Demolition Day. And I, you know, some of the things he's comparing, you know, hey, if we compare this to the past, this is going to be horrible. But I'm like, I don't think you're actually seeing what Trump is doing here. So I think we got both issues going on here. There's some news I'm seeing where they're just way too positive of where they think this is all going to go. And Trump is, whatever he does is perfect. And we got the other side, and even some people are supposed to be unbiased, looking at it very negatively. It's got to be somewhere in between, because that's really how Trump works. He's a negotiator. Like you said, he shoots for the moon first to reestablish the playing field, and then you come down to what is going to be the end game. And so it's just interesting. We just got to be careful, no matter which side you listen to on a regular basis, that you don't get pulled into the extreme there. because neither side really knows what's going to happen here.
And I think the process, by the nature of it, for what he's trying to do, is just by definition messy. In other words, yes, it's not clear cut. It's, you know, it's clear cut in terms of what he's saying. Okay, here's where things are, but that's still not the final version. So it's not fully clear yet. Okay, what exactly will the parameters, what will the rules be? And so are you having some companies that are, you know, increasing production or making more plans in the U.S.? Yes, some of them are. But the ones who are much more dependent, their profit margins are dependent on things being the way that they used to be, are not going to move as quickly. So it's a shakeup. It's not going to be equally bad for everyone or equally good for everyone when the everyone's I'm talking about are U.S. companies and industries. And so I just think it's going to be a process. There's going to be adjustments. It's not going to be smooth sailing until, you know, even once you get to the other side of, okay, whatever this transitionary negotiation process is, there's going to be adjustments that take time to happen because, you know, as we've talked about from the beginning, you don't just say, oh, I'm going to close my China plant down and open up one in the U.S. and just have that be totally seamless moving from one situation to another overnight without a whole lot of money being spent and a whole lot of time passing because, you know, construction and hiring are not instant. And then, again, your profit margins are not going to be the same if you've been relying on overseas labor costs being much lower. So it's an adjustment. It's underway. The initial reaction, like we said, not positive from the stock market's standpoint. It seems to be somewhat reevaluating that. Do I think, like I said, do I think we'll be going straight up from here to new highs in the imminent future? I sincerely doubt that based on the amount of downside that we had. Usually once you ring the bell and get that deleveraging happening, get those margin calls coming through and people are forced to sell, it takes a while. You know, the old saying, Wall Street has a million of these, as you know, the market takes the escalator up and the elevator down. And so we've seen the elevator down. We've had a little bit maybe of an elevator ride back, but I don't think it's going to continue to be, you know, straight up from here. Probably getting close to the point of needing to digest and move back and forth and, you know, settle. And we saw, you know, even Trump this week saying, well, this is not my stock market. This is still Biden's, you know, right. Of course, that was at a point where the market was not doing well that day and it reversed and closed, you know, more or less flat. And he also kind of said for the next quarter. So he's kind of setting the bar low, trying to set the bar low, just saying, you know, like, hey, look, there's still a lot of things going on that I don't want to take credit for. So it's a mixed bag. I would say a lot of the reports that we're seeing are mixed, and that's going to be the case. And, you know, I just think, you know, it's going to take some additional time to process through this transition.
Well, and to the dislike of the media, this process takes time. You know, the media, it's a lot more interesting if we have something to talk about now, what's going on now. But these negotiations that he's using the tariffs for take time to feel the economic impact in the other countries, like if we talk about China, for them to actually start feeling the impact of these very high tariffs we put on them. It takes time. It's not an overnight sensation where they're like, oh, that hurts. We need to do something different. And so, but even now, we're getting reports that China has dropped some of their retaliatory tariffs because it may have been affecting them a little more than they thought it would.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's roughly a quarter of the U.S. exports to China that, you know, previously were all being tariffed. They cut the tariffs on roughly a quarter of them. So, you know, it might have been something, most likely was something where they're being hurt by that more than we are. And so they decided, okay, well, let's, you know, so there's a lot of that. I think there's a lot going on in the background that we're not seeing. You know, I know the administration wants to put you know, a happy face on it. You know, it'd be better if they just waited until we had, okay, here is a deal, you know, that's finally, you know, been booked. But, you know, instead they keep saying that something is about to happen that so far hasn't happened. So again, the market is looking past all of that and just deciding, okay, you know, probably we will, you know, there is some progress being made in the background, and, you know, we will get to, you know, whatever that new normal is, it's on the way, and, you know, we'll adapt to it. It doesn't seem to be back into full panic mode at the moment.
And I was listening to a BCA research roundtable this week, and they're asking each other, analysts were talking to each other about their thoughts and how they differ. And so they brought up China. And so one of them, the negative one, was like, well, China has no reason at all to negotiate with the U.S. But then their Chinese expert came on, and she had a lot to say about, actually, here's why it would be in their benefit, in the, you know, benefit for them to talk to the U.S. about fixing this. These tariffs are going to impact them. And, you know, that was pretty interesting. And then Matt Gerken, our favorite geopolitical analyst, said, you know, they feel pretty strongly that there is already some backdoor communication going on. They're not up in the forefront talking where people can see them, but there's already backdoor communication, and that other deals are on the table, so with other countries. So Matt feels pretty good that in the near future, not sure exactly how far out that means, but in the near future, we'll start seeing some deals with some impactful countries, not just the smaller ones that we don't do a whole lot of trade with, but the ones we actually do trade with, which should be coming. And he feels like a 50-50 shot that something will get worked out with China.
Yeah, so I think that's right. You know, negotiation by definition is a back and forth process. And so you're not, you know, every country, regardless of which one it is, you know, so China may be on the one far extreme, where other countries have at least been more willing to say positive things about what the process is. But even the countries who would like to do a deal, that doesn't mean that, you know, they want the deal to be done on the terms that they feel are most favorable to them, just like the U.S. does. So the negotiation is a back and forth, and those don't happen instantly, because you're remaking literally the whole trade environment of the world in real time. Mm-hmm. And so with hindsight, you know, a few years from now, everybody will look back and say, oh, well, this is what happened. And it won't seem like it took forever. But when you're in the middle of the process, which is where we are, it seems like it's taking forever. But that doesn't mean that there's not a lot going on in the background. And of course, I think probably that's one of the reasons, like it or not, why we see these market moves, is they figure things out. So, you know, information is leaky, and, you know, whether it's U.S. people or, you know, people in these other countries that are saying, okay, here's what's going on, you know, information leaks out. And so markets react before the news. And then a lot of times that's exactly, you know, I'm on the Wall Street Sayings today, you know, buy on the rumor, sell on the news. And so maybe that's a little bit of what we're seeing right now, is a buying on the rumor. That, okay, things are getting settled in the background and we can relax a little bit. I should also throw in, you know, it's the, you know, we have had, you know, we're in earnings season. It's kicked off, again, mixed to a degree, but, you know, we had blockbuster earnings from a couple of the big tech names. And then we had some that weren't so great from some of the other tech names. So I think the market is settling down a little bit, looking at, okay, here's what's going on with individual companies. Here's how they're framing the outlook. So the ones that are more tariff affected, like Amazon and Apple, for example, you know, there's a little bit more caution there. And some of those that primarily are U.S., you know, based, like we saw from, well, or that have international operations that are not so much tariff affected, at least as we see at the moment, like Microsoft and Meta, those have had better results and better outlook. So that's what the market does. It kind of looks at all of these factors and weighs it and says, okay, good for you, bad for you. You know, and those things change over time as the economy changes and, you know, companies react to their changing environment. So anyway, for the moment, at least, after, you know, a month of miserable, or more than a month, 6 weeks, whatever it was, of, you know, miserable you know, market action, you know, it's a little better. And whether that's just the calm before the next round of the storm remains to be seen, or whether it's stabilization, you know, preparing for, you know, hopefully a more positive environment once we get through this adjustment period. You know, that would be the better scenario for everyone, but we'll have to wait and see.
Well, our regular listeners know that Jerry's concerned about a potential recession happening this year. You know, we've been concerned for a little while. This has been a kind of a crazy time when you look at economic indicators. The leading indicators have been pointing down for, it feels like 18 months or something now. I mean, it's been a long time. But the current economy just kind of keeps plugging along. And one thought is, when we talk to, and you can catch this interview on our website from EPB Research, we talk to them about why is that the case? What's going on here? And a lot of their research, we read it each week, is still coming back to unemployment. Unemployment's been steady for a while. We haven't had this big uptick. Last year we had one of those where it jumped, where it was more than the typical amount that we jump at a time. And typically when that happens, you head towards recession, but then we just leveled off again, and it's just been going level, level, level. We're still at what we many consider full employment. So the new job numbers came out today, and it just kind of looks in line with kind of staying flat for now.
Yeah, the headline number was fairly decent. The market took that as a sign of strength. I think the underlying, you know, when the economist nerds dig into the details, there are definitely still some big question marks on certain things. So even that's not like rock solid, but the overall unemployment level, you know, remained steady and close, like you said, close to full employment. So we haven't really, even though we've seen layoffs going up, the job creation side of things, at least for the moment, as far as we can tell. And of course, employment is a lagging indicator, yes, as we always talk, yep, about. But nevertheless, so far, we haven't seen a full meltdown there, even with all of the, you know, government sector cuts that clearly have been happening and will continue to happen, and some of which, as we've also talked about, haven't really shown up in those unemployment stats yet, but will later in the year. But so for the moment, it's still kind of a muddle along, holding its own type of environment. And even though we did see the first quarter GDP number be negative, a big part of that, by far the biggest part of it, was the export number was massive. And so that's kind of a deduction against the GDP strength, because that's imports, not your, you know, domestic economy. But that was pretty much front running the tariff. So companies knew this was coming, and they, you know, rushed to get all of this stuff sent over here before it would be affected. And so, you know, that is going to distort that statistic a bit. And you'll probably see some, you know, change that's not going to be the same thing in the next quarter GDP, because that opportunity went away and companies built up their inventories in anticipation. So, you know, that doesn't mean that we're avoiding a recession because of that. I'm just saying, you know, that right, one number alone is not, you know, a hugely negative number based on everything else that's going on. So still, like I said, in transition, I just think it's going to take some more time to figure it out. In the meantime, we've had some relief from, you know, the big negativity. So love to see it continue. Love to see economic growth somehow manage to hold up. But, you know, again, I just think there's still some adjustments. Some areas of the market will be affected in ways that are not as positive, whereas others will probably like the changes. And, you know, it's just going to take some time for that to work through the system.
Well, and on top of that, we still got Trump is dealing with geopolitical issues. We've got Iran and Israel, still figure out what's going to happen over there, if anything big's going to happen. You got Russia, Ukraine. I guess this week, Ukraine and the President Trump did come to an agreement on some mineral rights. I'm not exactly sure how that may affect stabilizing that area or not. That's not fully clear, but and we still got other areas to keep an eye on. So I kind of feel like the economy is, you know, going down the sideline of football, but it just takes one little push and they may fall out of bounds to recession. But so far, they're keeping their balance and hanging in there.
And we've got the budget, all the budget and tax stuff on the table too. So not really any budget cuts, tax cuts maybe. So maybe the market likes both of those things for the moment.
Right. So a lot more to come. All right. We'd like to take just a moment to remind you how to learn more about Cornerstone Financial Services. Jerry Tuma, myself, Michael Williams, David McCord, and the rest of our team here at Cornerstone. You can go to cornerstonereport.com. That's cornerstonereport.com. You can also get Jerry's latest special report, Bear Market Starting? Which came out recently. Again, it's a good update on what the macro economy is doing and how we're looking at the economy going forward. The previous one is also very good, came out in the fall. They kind of go back to back and tie in together a lot. So that one's called The Election Blues. So you can check those out on our website, cornerstonereport.com. That's Election Blues. And then the latest report, Bear Market Starting. You can also catch previous week's broadcasts and interviews on our website, along with the podcast versions, which can be found at Spotify and Amazon Audible. We should have it back up on Apple in the near future, but there's been a glitch there, so we'll get that up and running. But currently, you can find us at Spotify and Amazon Audible. And of course, for a free consultation, we encourage you to call us at 1-800-327-4285. That's 1-800-327-4285.
And our next guest is Dan Russo. He's a charter market technician and one of the principals at Potomac Fund Management. This guy, he knows he's a charter market technician, so he, like David McCord, the president of our firm, understands the trend following. He understands how to be defensive. He's, again, the charter market technician and director of research for Potomac. And bottom line, he's full disclosure here, they're one of the money managers that we use because their philosophy is just like our philosophy. They've got a 20-year track record. I can't give you any of that detail over the radio, but I will say this. He and I are on the exact same page in terms of, A, the philosophy for their firm. That's why we hired them for basically kind of think of them as a sub-advisor for us, number one. Number two, our views on the market are the same right now. He believes that we've entered a bear market. He wouldn't define how much because that's not how their system works. You know, I tend to be more macro, big picture. I'm looking at it going, I think this is a significant bear market, not just a mini one, M-I-N-I, not just a mini bear. I think it's a maxi bear, probably. We won't know for several months. But again, one of the things that he and I talked about, you know, and I mentioned in the show, essentially people, if it is a big bear market, if it's a grizzly bear or if it's a, let's say, a daddy bear, not a mama bear or a baby bear, baby bears are usually corrections in an uptrend market, long-term uptrend. Mama bears are 20 to 30%-ish range that happen frequently every few years in the market. But the daddy bears happen once every few years, once a decade or every two decades. Those are the big ones that are maximum avoid all pain if you can because they're typically most of the time, and again, past performance, no guarantee on what I'm saying here, no guarantee of future results. But the 2000 bear market, the S&P 500 was down 49% from top to bottom, NASDAQ down something like 78%, if memory serves me correct. The blow up in 2008 was slightly worse than that, at least on the S&P 500, down over 50%. The goal, in my opinion, this is how I look at the world, and not everybody looks at it the same way. People have different opinions. A lot of it depends on your age and your risk tolerance and your need for income. Because if you need income and you're taking it out of a stock portfolio, you can have real problems in a big bear if you go into a daddy bear because you deplete your account. It's dollar cost averaging in reverse if you know how that philosophy works. But I think that we're probably in the beginning of a bigger bear market. Not, I don't think it's going to be near severe as to 08, but I am concerned, as most of you know, with Iran and what's going on with Israel. And I think we've already started the down leg due to the trade restrictions and trade wars. So without any further ado, we're going to talk to Dan Russo. He is a charter market technician, and he's the director of market research for Potomac Fund Management. We'll talk to Dan. Dan, I know your philosophy is similar to ours. Matter of fact, pretty well identical to ours. The goal being to make money in the up markets and avoid most of the losses in the down markets. Nobody's going to be perfect at that. But, you know, obviously, if you lose less in a bear, then you don't have as much ground to make up. you guys have been very successful, past performance and no guarantee future results, obviously, but you've been very successful at this in the past. Give me your view, because I know we have David McCord is the president of our firm. He's a chartered technical analyst. Give us your view on the technicals as to what you guys tend to follow. Does the evidence lead you to believe that we've entered a bear market at this point? Is it too early? What are you guys looking at from here?
Yeah, so happy to have the conversation, and thanks for having me on. Yeah, from a technical perspective, which is the only way that we look at the market at Potomac, at a very high level, what we try to do is kind of three legs to the stool. You know, what's the trend in the market, up, down, sideways? How healthy is that trend as measured by market breadth? So in a strong bull market, we would expect to see more stocks going up than going down. We would expect to see more volume trading in the stocks that are going up than the stocks that are going down. And we'd expect to see more stocks making new highs than making new lows, right? So that's how we measure the health of the trend. And then the third leg of the stool is intermarket analysis, where we look at different sectors and industry groups within the broader stock market, as well as different asset classes, to get a sense for their movements, their historic correlations to equity prices, and what their current trends are telling us. So as I kind of look at the market as we sit here in mid-April, you know, the S&P 500 has cut below a measure of longer to intermediate term trend, the 60-week moving average. At the same time, we have been seeing a deterioration in market breadth, i.e. we're seeing more stocks going down than going up. We're seeing more stocks making new lows than making new highs. And while not explicitly part of our system, I like to look at trend measures. I'm kind of a trend follower at heart. So I've turned that into breadth metrics that I pay attention to. So for instance, the percentage of stocks in the NYSE or in the S&P 500 that are currently trading above their 200-day moving average or their 50-day moving average. Those metrics have been declining, right? So we basically have the trend has turned lower, confirmed by a deterioration in market breadth. And then the third leg of the stool, intermarket analysis, you know, we've seen some breakdowns in key intermarket themes, one of which that's important to our work is the Dow Jones Transportation Average. You know, this is honestly is, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. It's our riff on the Dow theory concept, which is a concept that is 120, 130 years old, but still holds. And if you look at the Dow transports, number one, they failed to confirm the new highs that the S&P 500 made in February 19th, I believe it was, which incidentally was the same day as the all-time high in 2020. And the transports have been trending lower ever since late January. So from a technical perspective, we don't necessarily think in terms of, is this a bear market? Is this a bull market? We think of things, you know, what is this environment now per our technical work? And what does that mean for the odds of the market going higher or lower over the time frame that we care about? And when I kind of roll all of that up, it's hard to make a bullish case for the market based on the technical pictures and the metrics that we care about.
Okay, so right now all of your signals are yellow or red. It is a good way to put it, I guess, if you were a stoplight. You used an analogy, and essentially here one of your recent pieces says, if you know how to swim, and I dropped in a mile into the ocean and said swim to shore, the most conducive environment for reaching land quickly would be one where, A, the tide is coming in, B, the wind and the waves are working in your favor, and importance, the tide would be rising. So your time to paddle as hard as you possibly can, as new waves are forming, the wind would be at your back. Now, that's in a bull market is my interpretation of what you're saying here. But at the same time, the flip side occurs if you're in a bear market. Would you like to kind of elaborate for our listeners here a little bit about that analogy? And you've just kind of given us, it sounds to me like, your view is that the tide has turned. As a matter of fact, that's what the commentary said, meaning, okay, there's a lot of bear signals going on that are being fired off right now. A lot of, maybe it's blinking red lights, not red, full red yet. But bottom line is, that's a very good analogy. You said if you're a swimmer, the best strategy is when the tide is falling, you conserve as much energy as possible. Intensely battling against the tide is a sure way to burn energy while making little progress. Would you like to use that analogy to explain kind of where you see the market right now overall?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I think if you substitute energy for capital and swimmer for investor, that analogy kind of works, right? So, again, like I said, if assuming you know how to swim, I grew up on Long Island outside of New York City, so I spent a lot of time at the beach. And, you know, if you're a mile offshore or whatever it is, and you're trying to get back to land as quickly and as efficiently as possible, the best environment for you is the tide is rising. You catch waves right as they're forming, and, you know, ideally the wind is at your back. When the opposite is true, if you try to swim against the tide, against the waves, and against the wind, you are going to burn a lot of energy and make little to no progress. So if I kind of think about how we view the world at Potomac, you know, we have an intermediate term trend system that I kind of liken to the tides, right? When that trend is bullish or rising, that tells us that this is a good environment to make hay, right? To make your way towards shore, right? And then we have shorter term systems that are designed to fire within that bullish environment that tell us that the odds favor a continuation higher. More recently, and I guess it's over we're 6 weeks now below a major trend line that we like to pay attention to, I liken that to the tide going out, right? So essentially now, if you're trying to put capital at risk, you are swimming against the tide. Now, can it be done? Yes, because as we know, if you pay attention to the ocean, regardless of what the tide is doing, the waves are still coming and going, right? But when the tide is going out, the waves don't crash as high on the shore as when the tide is coming in. So when the tide is rolling out, or when we're in a downtrend, by the way that we measure it, we are trying to conserve energy / capital, but look for opportunities to make some headway. That being said, we have some short-term counter-trend trading systems that are designed to fire when the market has gone down, you know, too far, too fast, right? We know the market doesn't go up in a straight line. We know the market doesn't go down in a straight line. There's these waves, if you will, right? This ebb and flow to the market. So, you know, realistically, by the metrics that we look at, and if, you know, we were a swimmer, this to us looks like an environment where you would want to conserve energy.
Mm-hmm. I would totally agree with that. And I know you mentioned...
I figured you would.
Of course, that's our philosophy is the same. You know, what I've done for years is different than what you guys do. But frankly, I think that you guys are better than we were on that. David McCord is a chartered market technician, but we still like your systems. And you've got a phenomenal long-term track record, which is past performance is no guarantee of future results from a standpoint, I have to say.
Yeah, that. And I have to think that, you know, David probably looks at the world in a similar way
fashion, yeah.
to the way we do, given his background and training as a chartered market technician.
Right.
I'm affiliated with the chartered, the CMT Association. I'm one of the chapter chairs here in New York. So I also grade level 3 of the exam. So if anyone's thinking about ever taking that, you will cross my path at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's kind of the philosophy is one of, you know, buy and hold investing has its advocates, but our view of the world is that it's very, very difficult to sit through the market's drawdowns, right? And just in the past 25 years, we've seen the S&P 500 lose half of its value twice and more than a third of its value 5 years ago. When I first started in this business, I have I think I have the best career starting week ever in the past 2 or 3 decades. I started working full time on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. You'll remember this, the week that AOL bought Time Warner.
Oh yeah.
And it was new media buying old media and classic. This time is different thinking.
Exactly.
And you know, 2 months after that, the NASDAQ topped and we went into the bursting of the dot-com bubble. And look, it's just kind of simple math, right? If you lose half your capital, you need 100% to get back to even, assuming you stayed invested. And if you lose, say, 25% of your capital, I say only because relative to 100, you only need 33% to get back to even. So you know, the math of compounding works in your favor if you can avoid the catastrophic losses. And right. you know, that's a similar philosophy to what you have and what you employ. Right. And that's a similar philosophy to what we have. Now, the flip side of that is you can avoid catastrophic losses, but a lot of the ways to avoid catastrophic losses also severely cap upside. So for us, what we're trying to do is get as much of that upside capture as possible while limiting the downside capture, i.e. we want to try to lose less than the market in those downturns, because we know that the math of compounding works in your favor over the long term if you're able to accomplish that.
Very good point. You know, and I know the industry, and if you have a comment on this, fine. I know I didn't ask you this ahead of time, so you probably don't have your stats in front of you, but I always laugh, you probably do too, at the industry argument that if you miss the best 10 days and so forth, how much your return went down, but they never talk about the flip side. You know, I'm a Bible kind of guy, and it says in Proverbs, first to present his case seems right until another comes forth to examine him. And everything we do in trials in America, jurisprudence system, you have to hear from both sides, the defense and the prosecution. And yet the industry focuses on, well, if you miss the best 10 days, then your return goes from whatever double-digit number down to a low single-digit kind of number. But they don't tell the other side of the story is if you miss the big crashes, you don't have to make near as much on the way up. You have any comment on that?
Yeah, actually I do, because this has been a topic of conversation and I recently got into a dialogue with somebody about it. I think what's even more interesting is that argument is often presented by the advocates of buy and hold investing.
Right.
And they talk about if you miss the 10 best days, here's what happens to your returns and you're better off staying invested. What I think is even more interesting is not only do they not tell you what happens if you miss the 10 worst days,
right.
they also don't tell you that more often than not, the 10 best days and the 10 worst days cluster around each other.
Right.
Meaning, and oftentimes, both of those events, the best days and the worst days, happen in bear markets. And or let's throw away the traditional definition of a bear market. More often than not, the 10 best days and the 10 worst days happen when the S&P 500 is below its 200-day moving average, right?
Good
so in
point.
Theory, when you're swimming against the tide.
Yes.
And furthermore, what they don't tell you is that if you miss the 10 best and worst days, you actually end up coming out ahead.
I know.
So
I know.
It's... Over, obviously, these are long-term metrics,
right.
But I think it's interesting that oftentimes the 10 best days cluster very close to the 10 worst days,
right.
And they often happen in a downtrend, right below a measure of intermediate to longer-term trend, mm-hmm. something like the 200-day moving average. I mean, just take last Wednesday for example. Last Wednesday, or was it Wednesday or Thursday? It was Wednesday. April 9th, we saw the S&P 500 up nearly 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where did that happen? It happened in the midst of a downtrend. It happened below the 200-day moving average, right? And, you know, as we record this, the market is, again, taking a leg to the downside. So it's an incomplete argument at best. I'm not going to say it's deceiving, purposely deceiving. It's an incomplete argument.
Okay. I think that's a polite way to say it, and I won't disagree with you on that, because it's you have to have both sides of the story. You can't take one side and you think about it. How many trading days are there in a year? I guess there's what, 260 or so.
252 is the number that we use.
Okay, 252 trading days a year, and if you do this over a 20-year period, that's 2,500 days in the sample size, and if you miss the ten best days. What are the odds, statistically, folks, if you think about this, what are the odds that out of 2,500 trading days-ish, the 10 best days out of 2,500, you're going to do this? You're going to get out of the market right before the bounce and then get back in and you miss your – does that I mean, statistically, that's insane in terms of the likelihood of that. That's not possible for that to happen, realistically, that you always miss the 10 best days out of 2,500. I mean, think about it. If you had statistics in college, I don't think you'd think that way. So anyhow, we're on the same wavelength.
I mean, if there's somebody out there who can do it, I'd gladly have them manage money for me, and I would probably pursue one of my other hobbies.
Right. Right. All right. Well, the current, it looks to me like the tide is going out. It looks to me like we're in the beginning of a bear market, yet to be determined how severe. That may not be what you guys look at. I'm looking at maybe this is more than just a 20 or 30% drop, and I'm concerned we're going to have a recession in the fall, and I'm also concerned about the geopolitics with Iran and Israel, and who knows what could happen there. Anyway, this has been a very good interview, Dan. Any final comments on y'all's philosophy or what you're seeing in the marketplace, right?
No, I mean, I think our philosophy boils down to, if any of your listeners are familiar with the concept of Moneyball, right? Billy Beane with the Oakland A's. It's, we're trying to filter out as much of the noise and the narrative as possible. Focus on the data points that we have collected and tested over time to tell us, you know, the likelihood of the market either continuing higher or continuing lower, and kind of not getting caught up in the narrative of the day and, you know, the whims of the mainstream media, mm-hmm. et cetera. You know, for us, we like to say we believe in probability mm-hmm. over prediction. Mm-hmm. So when we run our models and we look through our trading systems, and if, you know, based on those systems and those models, they tell us that the odds are that the market is going to move higher, we want to try to take advantage of that. And if they tell us that the odds are that the market is, you know, not likely to move higher, or that the environment is not conducive to being bullish, we want to step aside and wait for the short-term opportunities within that trend while the bigger picture trend works itself out.
That's right. And just for the listener's sake, the system they run is very complicated, but I've seen under the hood and I've seen what the metrics are, and what it's all is statistically driven. It's not going to be driven by emotion, although emotion will affect how the statistics work, if that makes sense. And we all know if this is a big one, which I think it might be, typically there's about three phases emotionally. There's a denial phase, which is where I think we are now. Then the recognition phase, if this ends up being a bigger than a 20 or 30% correction. Recognition typically is where everybody goes, oh, this is a bear market, but then it's kind of like deer in the headlights. They don't want to move. And then the capitulation phase is the third phase. Now, that's not guaranteed, but that's the trend history of the bigger bears. Do you have any final comments on that, Dan?
Yeah, I think the commentary on emotion is interesting. Right, we all kind of know that the two biggest emotions that drive stock prices in the short term are fear and greed, right? And those emotions show themselves in stock prices. So for us, you know, we will focus on, you know, stock prices and the trends of the assets that we care about, because, you know, we always like to say if it's important, it will show up in price, mm-hmm. and we will therefore catch it within our model. So as prices roll over and that tide starts to go out, the emotional responses to that will filter through equity prices, as well as fixed income prices and commodity prices.
That's right.
And which will then filter through our model. So what that allows us to keep our emotions out of it, mm-hmm. and just follow our system.
Follow the money, so to speak, because the market, even though it gets irrational at times, both on the upside and on the downside over the longer term, you need to follow what the money is doing, because again, the money flow, as you mentioned, is going to determine the stock price. And there are certain patterns in history that have a tendency to repeat. And this has a lot of reminiscent to me of some previous bears we've been through. So, Dan, thank you for your time on today's show. I'm sure our listeners are going to enjoy it. And we'll look forward to catching up with you some more in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that interview. The first part, it was a little bit technical, from Dan Russo. Dan, again, is a chartered market technician. They look at the world a little bit differently than the buy and hold crowd or the chartered financial analyst. Real intelligent, very intense research that you have to go through to get your chartered market technician. Again, slightly different because they don't look at it from the buy and hold perspective. And buy and hold can work for long stretches, but when it fails, it can be big. And the biggest challenge to me is if you're retired or near retirement and you go through, I would make the case that if you're in retirement or near retirement, most likely you do not need to go through a 50% bear, because as we know how the math works, Michael Williams taught stats at Texas Tech for 15 years, statistics. We know the math works this way. If you have a 50% decline like we had in 2008 and in 2000, now you need 100% gain to make it back. That takes a lot of time. And again, it's also racking emotionally. Dan and I were kind of talking after the break. He said, If you're going into one of the big ones, most people hit a puke point at some point where they just can't take it anymore and they bail out, and they usually bail out at the exact wrong time. So with that said, I appreciate you guys listening in. I think this is a real good interview with Dan Russo of Potomac.
Jerry Tuma Smart Money is a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services of Dallas, Texas. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Financial advisors at Cornerstone could help you if you prefer to delegate your investment decisions to a financial professional. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA, SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. We publish a newsletter, Cornerstone Report, which is available on our website or by calling our toll-free number at 800-327-4285. That's also the number to call for more information about anything we've discussed during today's broadcast. For more information, visit our website at cornerstonereport.com. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma's Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. Remember, we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.